Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and we will start our show with our continuing series from Odyssey, I'm Listening, with a conversation led by our colleague Dave Glover with the medical topics MH, man-to-man, and post-traumatic stress disorder, a.k.a. PTSD. Dave?
From Odyssey, in partnership with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, this is I'm Listening, Talk Away the Dark, a limited series. Today, David Glover hosts our intimate conversation on Straight Talk with Men regarding their thoughts, emotions, and potential suicidal ideation. He is joined by the Vice President of Health Equity and Engagement for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, Victor Armstrong, and Steve Seipel, a longtime AFSP volunteer, advocate, and who has had his own personal experiences with suicide, suicidal ideation, grief, and loss. And now, here's David Glover.
The reason I'm actually here is that in 2002, my brother Keith ended his own life. And standing literally, this is very dramatic, but standing literally at my dad's casket in March of 2002, my brother talked about taking his own life. We all know who are involved in this, who have been through this, that there's some people who never talk about it. And there's some people who talk about it a lot. So since then, that's been sort of my mission, is to do whatever I could to help with suicide prevention. My first guest is Vic Armstrong. He's an AFSP expert. He was born and raised the son of a pastor in North Carolina. As such, he developed an appreciation for the challenges experienced by historically marginalized communities. Steve Seipel is also with me, and Steve has an amazing story. Suicide and suicide prevention have touched at least three generations of his family. Steve, let's start with you. Please tell us your story.
I lost my father in 2001 to suicide. He was 53 at the time. After a couple of years of working through that complicated grief, I actually had found the Out of the Darkness Community Walk, the first season of those with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Another mother of one of our kids had reached out to my wife via email looking for volunteers to help organize this walk. That mom had no idea that I had lost my father to suicide. So it was a very direct answer to prayer that I had during that season to do something positive with my tragedy and help other people through my experience. And it's been, gosh, what is it, 2024? It's been 20 plus years that I've been involved with AFSP.
You eventually had your own struggles with mental health and with suicidal ideations. Can you tell the audience about that?
I did. About 5 years ago, I was in between jobs, as they say. I was really struggling towards the end of the calendar year with what my future held, and really trying to hold our finances together. And I had a pretty acute suicidal ideation one day. And then the next week, I had a friend, I was at a meeting and was with another friend of mine who's a volunteer for AFSP. We left that meeting outside of the building. My friend turned to me and noticed that there was something different about me and came straight out and asked if I'd been thinking about suicide.
Which is really what we're talking about today. During this episode of Talk Away the Dark, we're focusing on men and struggles with mental health and suicide. What was it about thinking about not being here anymore that seemed like a relief to you?
There was an acute pain. You know, there was a feeling of doom and hopelessness that I had that I couldn't shake. And I had had that before, but it's a spectrum, right? It was at a point where I had actually gotten to the point where I had brought the suicide prevention text number up on my phone and started a message, but didn't send it. So it was that close. I have found also that, at least for me personally, you know, that the acuteness of that moment, it usually lasts about 10 or 15 minutes. If I can get through 15 minutes and be safe, then it usually will leave me. Now, that may not be the case for everybody, but I think there's a lot to that. The biggest risk factor for our demographic is loneliness. And if we're alone, that's the greatest risk of suicide, I think.
I relate to that. My style of suicidal ideation is wishing there was a wizard who could just push a reset button so that I wouldn't be blamed for anything, so that no one would be mad at me, so there'd be no guilt. But if I could just push that reset like on a video game and start over again, or just kind of go into a soft oblivion, that was what seemed like a release to me. Steve, when your friend asked you so bluntly, are you thinking about killing yourself? What did that do? Was it like the proverbial slap in the face?
It was more like a waterfall, a waterfall of emotions. I teared up. I admitted I had. I thanked her immediately. That was the button that needed to be pressed for me to, one, you know, increase the frequency of my therapist visits, two, admit to my wife what I had been feeling. I hadn't even admitted it to my closest love. It was like a permission to talk about it.
Vic, does a lot of this hit in tune with you and your background and your pursuits?
Yes, I'm sitting here listening to both of you. I think so much of what you're sharing both aligns with a lot of what we know about suicide, and also in the way that you talk about some of your experiences and the way that you deal with it. There are also some things that you're doing that I think are just are naturally the way that survival instinct sometimes can kick in. As I'm listening to you, Dave, even as you were talking about your reset, oftentimes what we do find, and this also ties in to Steve's story, about how the acuteness lasts from 10 to 15 minutes. Oftentimes, if we can get past that 10 to 15 minutes, if we can get past that temporary acuity, we can hit that reset. And it doesn't mean that your suicidal thinking completely goes away, but that moment when you are in that darkest place to where you are planning to end your life, if you can get past that moment, oftentimes you can find your ability to reset. And what also happens then is, even as you're thinking about that, if you had a magic wand, if you had a wizard and you didn't have to do this, didn't have to be here, what also happens sometimes is when we talk about it, even as Steve's friend asked him what was going on with him, sometimes we talk about it, we ask the question, and then we listen, and we people an opportunity to talk about what's going on with them. Oftentimes people find a way to talk themselves through that 10 to 15 minutes of acuity, ever how long it lasts. So even in that time when you're thinking about, well, what if I didn't have to do this? What if I didn't have to be here anymore? what it also allows you to do is think about, how did I get to this point where suicide became the answer? And if you can start to think about that, sometimes we can get ourselves through that moment. But also when you're dealing with someone who is in that dark place where they're really thinking about suicidality, sometimes asking them that question, are you thinking about killing yourself? And then how did this become an option? How did you get to the point where suicide was the answer for you? When they start to talk through it, you often will find out that it's not that one event, that one trigger that we often think is the thing that brings someone to that point of suicidality. It's often a combination of things. I often tell people, the way I talk about suicide is that we tend to talk about it as like suicide itself is a disease. Suicide itself is not a disease. It is the worst possible outcome of a combination of a lot of very complex things, often including mental health challenges. But that also means that if it's a combination of those things, there are also opportunities to intervene if we have the right access, the right resources at the right time. And sometimes that intervention can be that one person who says to you, are you thinking about suicide? And asks you the question, talk to me about this. Tell me what you're feeling. Tell me how you got to this point. And then that gives you that ability to reset.
Yeah, Vic and Steve, what you're saying makes me think about, we all have that voice in our head. And the meanest guy I know is the voice in my head. He does not like me. And we all know that when you talk to a friend and your friend has these insurmountable problems, you can solve their problems pretty easily. You can say, look, buddy, you told me five things. We can work through all five of these things. When it's you, it's so much more difficult. Let's talk about, as men, why do you think this, and how do you think this affects us in particular? This waterfall effect of stress and problems, and I just can't get out from under this.
We're wired to provide and to solve problems and to produce, you know, as men, I think. And it's just natural to be, you know, mentally working on something. Unfortunately, you know, as you said, some of us will get to where we're trying to solve a lot of problems that, you know, either don't exist and are just perceived, or we're overstating the severity of those problems.
Yeah, I think for me, I think the good and the bad is that the voice in my head loves me a whole lot. The voice in my head thinks thinks I'm the coolest person in the world sometimes, which also means that voice thinks that I can overcome anything. Mm-hmm. That voice in my head thinks that I should be able to power through anything. And I think as men, we're socialized to really believe that strength is in being able to do it by yourself. That it's a sign of weakness when you have to ask for help, or it's a sign of weakness when you have to admit that you feel vulnerable. I used to work for several years counseling men who were court ordered for domestic violence. And even in those situations, I often found that men didn't have the language to talk about emotions. Mm. And that impacts our mental well-being, because when we can't identify that what we're really feeling is loneliness, or what we're really feeling is fear, we tend to attach other emotions to it that we can identify with. And sometimes that's either anger, or sometimes it's failure. We see ourselves as failures because we can't power through something. Yeah. And so I tell men all the time, I tell couples all the time, that one of the best things that you can do for the man in your life, the men in your life, is create safe space for them to be vulnerable, to talk about when they're feeling like they're overwhelmed, or when there are things that they feel like they can't deal with. As opposed to feeling like I can't show vulnerability, I've got to be able to show strength.
And what I'd like to do, in case I have failed to ask some of the right questions, or there are some roads we didn't go down, let's just kind of each take a turn. And, you know, final thoughts or some things that we've learned today. I'll lead it off. I will always remember, I'll call it the 15-minute rule, Steve, that you brought up, and Vic, that you confirmed. Get through the 15 minutes, and if you start feeling like you can't, pick up the phone, dial 988, call your best friend if you think you're not going to make it through that 15 minutes. Steve, how about you? Final thoughts.
It took everything. When I was in my dark place, it took everything, mental health therapy, it took medication, it took exercise, it took a healthy community of men socially, it took my faith, it takes so many things to just use every resource and think about every aspect of life in terms of keeping your mental health in check.
Vic,
if you are concerned about someone that you think may be thinking of suicide, don't be afraid to ask them the question clearly, concisely, confidently, are you thinking about suicide? And you may not be able to move someone from their suicidal thoughts in one conversation, but you can absolutely save a life in one conversation. Mm-hmm. If you can get that person just to pause and reset. And to anyone out there who's listening, just know that if you're struggling, your pain matters, your life matters. And if you are considering suicide, or if you're just experiencing some kind of mental health challenges, get help. And you can always dial 988 and be connected to a trained counselor who can connect you with the help, with the services, with the support that you need when you need it most.
You guys have been listening to Talk Away the Dark, an Odyssey production in association with American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Again, if anyone is struggling and it is emergent, pick up the phone. If it's something that you're not in your 15-minute window, go to afsp.org. Steve, can't thank you guys enough. I've learned a great deal. It's meant a lot to me, and I hope to talk to you in the future. Thank you so much.
To find out more about Talk Away the Dark, along with many more resources from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, please visit afsp.org. If you or someone you know is in crisis, please call or text 988. This is the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Someone is there to help you right now. I'm Listening is the mental health pillar of Odyssey in this radio station. Please remember, talk has the power to save lives. For the full show and more stories like this one, download the I'm Listening podcast on the Odyssey app or visit imlistening.org. From Odyssey, in partnership with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, this is I'm Listening, Talk Away the Dark, a limited series. Today, David Glover hosts our intimate conversation on mental health and the military. He is joined by AFSP expert and veteran Alex Silva, Wounded Warrior Project guest and Marine Corps veteran Dan Miller, and Wounded Warrior Project clinical expert Dr. Aaron Fletcher. Now here's David Glover.
My name is Dave Glover. I am here because in 2002, Christmas Eve to be specific, my brother ended his own life. The military has always been important to me because I never served. My dad joined the Navy after Pearl Harbor when he was 17 years old. My brother volunteered for the Army in 1971. And when I graduated in 1982, it just didn't seem like a thing. It wasn't important to me. And I've since regretted that. One of the biggest regrets I've had. So that's why I'm here now to the important people. Dan Miller served in the Marine Corps literally for decades, law enforcement. He's now a national speaker. Dr. Aaron Fletcher is the director of the Warrior Care Network, a clinical partnership between Wounded Warrior Project and four of the leading academic medical centers. Alex Silva was active duty Air Force from 2011 to 2023 and is AFSP's first manager of military suicide prevention. Dan, let me start with you. Dan, as I described, I'm here because I lost my brother. You have lost many brothers. Can you talk about that?
I lost a lot of friends and people that I knew because of being in Iraq and because of combat in Iraq. And, you know, that hurts. People say, well, that's what you signed up for. Yes. Okay. I signed up to be a Marine. We were Marines. We knew what we were getting into, but that doesn't make it hurt any less. But when we came home after my third deployment in 2008, everyone's so joyous at being home. We made it. We're sad for those that didn't come back with us. We memorialize them. We keep their families close to us and in our hearts. But then over a period of years, we've lost more and more Marines, you know, due to suicide. We're up to 11 now. And that hurts even more because they made it home. They made it through some really hard days and some really bad places. And we struggle. And when I say we, myself and my fellow Marines that I served with over in Iraq, and they're the people that we lost, their family members, their loved ones, their friends. It's a struggle to understand. And we fight to figure out what we can do to change it. And that's one of the reasons I belong to Wounded Warrior Project, because of my own struggles when it came to suicide and then the loss of my friends and trying to figure out a way to change the direction on this and figure out something we can do better so that I don't have to keep going to, or anybody has to keep going to these funerals for these men and women that gave so much, came home and made it. And then, you know, couldn't figure out another way or felt that there was no way else or there was no way other way to figure out a problem than you know, the route that they finally took. And so it hurts a lot of people. You know, so we fight every day to figure out how we can change that.
Dr. Fletcher and Alex, maybe you can jump in on this next question. So survivor guilt has become cliche, like PTSD. You know, people say I have PTSD because they got the wrong bread on their sandwich. We belittle it and we use it too flippantly. But to the extent that you have suffered from survivor's guilt, could you talk about that?
So the entire system is built around learning attention to detail and being inspected and making sure that your area is perfect. A lot of the military, even today, you know, you can have somebody who gets a DUI and that person's supervisor or sometimes even their entire unit might show up at 6 o'clock in the morning with their full service, you know, uniform on, which they might not have even worn in 2 years, you know, to look at that person who got a DUI and explain to the commander why they weren't there for them. And so when you talk to this group about suicide, it's a doozy. It's not something where you can just go to a civilian and say, who's going to say, yeah, I feel guilty sometimes too, because of course that it's a very common thing. But when you're formally charged with the well-being of people around you and everything they do is either your success or your fault as their person, except suicide, it's a hard thing to swallow.
When I, as a civilian, think about mental health struggles in the military and especially suicide prevention, I think about Dan. I think about people who have been in active combat. But you said 85% of the military don't, and yet they still have their own struggles. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think of one really good example is that when we think about a, you know, somebody who sees a lot of combat, what about a drone pilot? What about somebody who doesn't go to combat but is still asked to do very difficult things? And then they might have the experience of, you know what? Well, nobody shot at me. I didn't have to go and leave my home and my family, but they still have to deal with things. And that is just such a radically different issue. And then when you talk generationally, right? So yeah, it's so different depending on who you ask, what their branch was, what their culture was. I'm learning just about as much from Dan as everybody else is, because I was not in the Marines. I did not do 30 years. I worked in the Air Force medical, mental health, substance abuse world. You get a lot of access to people who have done different things. And I think that's something that you see that is very common across career fields is this belief that if you seek help, that you are forfeiting your career. And it makes sense to feel that way, especially, you know, you go into a recruiter's office and one of the first questions they're going to ask you is, you know, did you ever in your life have any problems with mental health or suicide? And if you want to get in, the correct answer is no. But then once you're in, it can feel like if somebody asks you, are you thinking about suicide, that really what they're asking you is, do you want to go to the hospital and lose your clearance and forfeit your career? And so getting a chance to really learn about what the process is by being part of the process is that if there's any takeaway that if there's anybody in the military or somebody who knows someone in the military who's listening, to pass on that it's counterintuitive, but when somebody self-identifies and says, I'm struggling, that is actually a really good indicator that person can be relied upon and keep secrets and that they will self-identify when they need to get help.
I just want to add, I know that, Dr. Fletcher was getting ready to say something, so I was very interested to hear what she
had
to say.
Yeah, I'm watching Dr. Fletcher nod along, so I as well would love to get your medical professional take on this.
I wanted to bring it back to something that Alex had just mentioned around, you know, is it only folks in combat situations that feel these, you know, whether it's suicidal thoughts or whether it's mental health challenges more so than others. And what I can say from my experience and the data that we collect at Wounded Warrior Project, which our, you know, membership group spans various age groups, all of the branches of service, and a number of individuals that have experienced combat and a fair amount that haven't. But a common thread, though, is those thoughts of suicide, anxiety, depression doesn't discriminate based on combat. And so I think being able to, for Dan and Alex to raise awareness to that and to talk about that to servicemen and women that are still active duty and even veterans, that if you haven't experienced combat or you have all of your limbs and all of your fingers, that you're fine and that your struggle, you know, isn't enough. I think that's a stigma that we absolutely want to break. And to know that these, the anxiety, the depression, the post-traumatic stress, the thoughts of suicide, like I said, doesn't discriminate. People come in to the military with a variety of different backgrounds. And being in the military, I would say, again, as a civilian, there's a fair amount of stress at all times, even if you're not in combat. And so being able to talk about those things, as Dan said, to know when you need help, as Alex pointed out, that those individuals that are saying, I need help, you know, are recognizing they have that insight and that awareness and they want to feel better. Nobody likes waking up in the morning thinking, I can't do this anymore.
For all of you, what I'm struck with is how far we've come. I think about my dad, World War II, who never mentioned anything until he developed Alzheimer's, and then he would talk about it. And I think about people who I have grown up with. We're really making strides. Obviously, this is important what we're doing right now. But I am impressed with all of you and Dr. Fletcher and Alex in particular, from the medical standpoint, that it's not only uncomfortable for the members of the military, but for those who are trying to care for them, because you're breaking boundaries as well.
Dave, I think that's such an incredibly important point. This is a very hopeful time as it comes to treatment options. We have interventions that work, that are effective, that it doesn't need to take 25 years to feel better. We don't have to white knuckle our way through this. The program that I run, Warrior Care Network, offers a 2-week accelerated treatment program where you start feeling better and see meaningful change on day 3 of these 2 weeks. The results last well past a year from your time in treatment. And so getting that message out, that there's people who want to help and there's help that is available and that works, is incredibly important.
Before we wrap this up, I'm sure there are many good questions that I should have asked and I just did not. So I want to go around the room and let you all have a chance to sort of sum up your thoughts. Dr. Fletcher, let me start with you.
Being willing to either ask for help or answer a question honestly when somebody that knows you comes up and says, hey, doesn't look like things are going well, can I help, will make a world of difference. Because we know that there's treatment that works and that it doesn't have to be the same for everybody. Not everybody's willing to jump right into therapy right off the bat. Totally fine. Wounded Warrior Project in particular has a variety of different mental health programs, physical health and wellness programs that are designed to build resiliency, to build coping skills, to build that sense of community. All of these come at no cost to the veteran or their family. We also work with active duty service members and their families. So just want to really put an exclamation point behind a sense of hope and a sense that, you know, Dave, this is what you brought up in the very beginning of the interview, is that we've made progress.
Dan, could you give us your final thoughts?
The subject of suicide in the military is one that is still very much a taboo in a sense. The subject of post-traumatic stress disorder is still something that is has a stigma to it, and within the military, and we're all fighting very hard to change that, to let people know whether you're active duty, reservist, or you are retired, or just you've gotten out, that there is help, there is plenty of people. There are plenty of people out there that want to give you a hand, and you're not alone. And there is nothing wrong with speaking out. Alex mentioned it, that, you know, the person that talks about it, the person that says something about it, you're showing strength. You're not showing weakness. It's the opposite of what someone might think, that if they open their mouth, they're weak. I used to think that way, very much so. I thought if I ever mentioned the fact that I had issues or problems, I was weak. I learned through rather tough roads that it is absolutely positively the opposite. We have to help each other. We have to look out for each other. It is perfectly fine if you are struggling to say something. You are not a weak individual. There are people there that will want to help you.
Alex, I'm going to let you bring it home for us.
I loved being in the military, and I love my career field of taking care of airmen. I believe in the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention to the degree that I walked away from 12 years to come and be part of this team. And I just want to make sure that there's a chance to tell people why. And the reason is because we really do. If you're listening to this, you have agency in this issue, in your community and at a national level. We're making sure that there's funding for crisis response lines, you know, that we're making sure that mental health is included in healthcare packages that pass. And this is stuff that it's all happening from the community. And so suicide is a pretty easy to try to address. It's a health issue. It's a education issue. It's a policy issue. It's a support issue. And it's a knot that you have to pull out from every angle. But whether you have all the time in the world to be like an institutionalized volunteer, or if you just, some of the most important volunteers we have are the ones who show up one time and unload a truck to put on these events that help us raise this research.
Thank you, Alex. Be there for each other. If it is emergent, call 988. I'm Dave Glover. We'll talk soon. Thank you for listening.
To find out more about Talk Away the Dark, please visit afsp.org. For more information about Wounded Warrior Project, visit woundedwarriorproject.org. If you or someone you know is in crisis, please call or text 988. For the full show and more stories like this one, download the I'm Listening podcast.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
And joining us right now is Ms. Tammy Johnson. She's the founder of the nonprofit Empowering the Masses, whose focus is providing life skills and educational training for neighborhoods in Dallas. Tammy, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Thank you for having me this morning.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I think what you're doing is exceptional, and I've always been impressed with nonprofits that get started and then able to, you know, find little lifelines with partnerships and different people who like to volunteer on all sides. I'm talking about maybe corporate sponsorships or just people who want to help out, who actually can actually move the ball forward a little bit. Can you talk about when you guys started and then basically, once again, what exactly you're trying to accomplish?
Thank you. Yes, we got started in officially in 2018, but we've probably been operating about 2 years prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
And we, our goal is to empower our communities beyond themselves. We know that it's important to plant seeds. And I believe my people perish for lack of knowledge. And sometimes people just don't know right. what's out there, what's available to them, what resources are out there and available to them to be able to be self-sustainable. Mm-hmm. And I'm a direct benefactor of those types of opportunities where somebody, you know, planted a seed for me, gave me a hand up. And Empowering the Masses is what it is and came into to existence because of my own lived experiences.
I think that's phenomenal. And again, you guys do so many different things, including the food pantry. Can you talk about some of the services that you guys provide in the different neighborhoods in the Dallas area that you're able to work with?
Yes, we work primarily in South Dallas. Our principal office is located inside of the Martin Luther King Center, right there on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Mm-hmm. That's where we have all of our workforce training, career training classes that we provide at no cost to individuals in our communities that are not that traditional student that cannot afford to pay to go learn a trade or earn a living wage for their families. And they can come right to us right there in South Dallas. And take that training in a short amount of time and then become certified in that training. And then we help them with employment afterwards. But in also in Southeast Dallas in the Dolphin Heights neighborhood, as well as on Samuel Boulevard, we offer a food pantry. Mm-hmm. And we know that food insecurity is a symptom of a much bigger problem. Yes. I know because I experienced that. And I know it was because my mom couldn't work because she was sick the entirety of my youth. Mm-hmm. And so my sister and I were often food insecure. And it wasn't because she didn't want to provide. She just didn't have the means. That goes that symptom of a much bigger problem.
Was that one of the first things you were thinking of when you started the nonprofit, or was that something that came along as well?
Well, the first thing was feeding people.
Right.
But that's just short term, right? That's the immediate solution mm-hmm. to a problem that somebody has right then. But how do you put that person to a place of being able to take care of themselves and sustain their families? I don't think anybody genuinely wants to not be able to take care of their family.
Right.
And so you start your, you know, with the food pantry and it's kind of like a carrot, right? You mm-hmm. have the ability to meet the community, talk to the neighbors that you serve, find out what issues they're having. And then your goal is to try to address those issues. But what I've learned as a nonprofit, you can't address all of the issues, mm-hmm. but you can address, you know, things that you're good at and things that you have experience with so that your community can be sustaining, you know, beyond whatever services you provide.
I love the way you think. And like you said, you're able to meet the community with the food pantry. It's kind of like a carrot, like you mentioned. How did you go about starting the food pantry? In other words, were you able to get goods from like a food bank, and then you had your own food pantry? Tell me what the process was like, because a lot of people are always curious about these things.
So we started at my husband's church in East Dallas, Progressive Baptist Church, and we had some of the members kind of bringing us some items. Mm-hmm. And then I did a lot of research of how can we make this bigger? How can we serve on a larger scale? And North Texas Food Bank has a community distribution partner program.
Nice.
And so as long as you have your 501c3, your nonprofit, you can align with them. You meet certain criteria. Mm-hmm. And then because they have the big hub up in Plano, they need partners that can get the food to the people right there immediately.
Exactly.
And so when I researched that information, I applied to become a community distribution partner of North Texas Food Bank. And that helped us serve, you know, bigger, better, more quality foods. My idea is always to make sure the food that people get from us, they can provide meals for their families, mm-hmm. not just cheese or a block of or a can of meat. I want people to be able to cook with dignity.
Yes.
And choose items and take care of their family just like I would if I was going to the grocery store. So the North Texas Food Bank offered that opportunity, and it afforded me the opportunity to do that for our communities. But then came some community partners from some local retailers. And so we are a local retailer. We rescue food from Sam's mm-hmm. on Buckner Boulevard, Buckner and Samuel. Mm-hmm. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we get about two pallets each Tuesday and Thursday of just items that they couldn't sell And we were able to get it into the hands of the people in the community that couldn't afford to buy it. We partner with Tom Thumb, and we get a lot of the items also that we're able to get immediately into the hands of the community, as well as GoPuff. It's kind of like a DoorDash outlet store. And so we get a lot of organic items and things like that from them. And our community is happy to see it, and we're happy to be able to distribute it.
This is just fantastic. And again, it's about having the knowledge and then the I guess the go get it attitude. Let's go get this. We can get this thing done. And you're able to accomplish some of these things. I love what you're doing. So when you looked it all up, were you surprised that those opportunities were there? I'm only saying this because I think that's part of your empowering the community goal, is to let people know, if you just know about the availability, or if you just have the knowledge, you can accomplish and get things done, not only in your home, but in your own neighborhood.
Absolutely. Like it's amazing if we can research it, we can read, and people can provide the opportunities for us to have a conversation, to ask the questions, and are welcoming, you know, to share the knowledge, because knowledge that you gain is not specifically for you. Sometimes you're gaining knowledge to go and disseminate it to other people. And so I had the opportunity to read a lot, to ask a lot of questions. I was in a lot of meetings, going to a lot of community meetings to find out what's going on and what the community actually needed. Because what I did understand is I'm not the savior of the community. And so if I'm going to provide resources to the community, I got to know if I'm providing resources that the community actually needs and not what I think they need.
I love your mindset. Again, it's even on the food tip, it's like it's better to teach people how to fish as opposed to just give them the fish, right?
Right. Well, there's in our community health worker training program that we offer, and I was a college professor for a while, but one of the courses that we teach is our community health worker training, and they're like assistants to social workers. But one of the stories that I tell them two things. One, we got to practice culture humility. And then two, we are there to figure out what the issue is and what the problem is. And it's the upstream model, the upstream method. You have to go upstream to figure out what's happening. So there's a story that we tell in the community health worker training that there was some fishermen on the river. And as they were on the river, they kept hearing people fall into the water. And so they were becoming inundated with having to pull people out of the water. And so one of the fishermen was like, I'm going to go upstream and figure out what's going on. And the other fisherman was like, no, we have to stay here. There's so many people in this water. We got to pull them out of the water. And so the fisherman said, no, I need to go and figure out why these people are falling in so that we can stop it at the source. And so as a nonprofit, that's your goal, is to go upstream and figure out why people don't have what they need to have, and you can stop it at the source. Now, you can't alleviate hunger and poverty everywhere, because the Bible tells you that the poor will be with you always, but you're supposed to plant seeds. You're supposed to provide opportunities for people to be self-sustainable on their own, you know, in a dignified way.
Exactly. We're talking with Tammy Johnson. She's the founder, CEO of the nonprofit Empowering the Masses. Tammy, one of your programs that you have is the Lunch and Learn. Can you describe what that's all about? Because I think that's another brilliant idea.
Right. And so part of what's happening in the community is, especially in South Dallas, the life expectancy in South Dallas is 62 years. But if I go up the road to Highland Park or Carrollton, the life expectancy increases to 97 years. That's because people don't know how to take care of themselves or how to advocate for themselves and how to address the social determinants of health. Those are the things that cause life expectancies to be low. And so the purpose of the Lunch and Learns each month at the end of the month is to provide a healthcare provider, someone in the community who offers resources at low to no cost to the community, and come in and educate the community about those resources so that we can help manage chronic diseases, so that we can help people advocate for themselves at the doctor's office, or how to speak up about what's happening in their communities. That's how we change life expectancy. That's how we, you know, give people the power to be empowered to advocate for their own communities and themselves.
This is very impressive. And again, over the years, you guys have had crowds of, you know, a couple of hundred people over time who've been educated while they, quote unquote, dying. I love this, and also love some of the other training programs that you have. Can you talk about the CHW training and the, I don't want to jack up the name, but the phlebotomy. You say it.
Phlebotomy.
Yeah, phlebotomy.
Phlebotomy. Phlebotomy yeah. training. So the phlebotomy training is a 12-week training program. As I mentioned before, I was a college professor, and everything that I've done, I've either worked in that field or I've taught it. But the phlebotomy training program is 12 weeks because we know that it's a lucrative career. It's an entryway into the medical field, mm-hmm. And we can do it in a short amount of time. But we know that it's going to lead to long-term results and earn above a living wage upon graduation. And our students get to take the classes with us, and they get to sit for their certification exam. And it's a national certification exam in-house with us. And then our community health worker training, they're like community liaisons. They work with social workers and other community organizations to provide opportunities and educate our communities mm-hmm. About what's out there and available. And they are, once they take that course, that one's 16 weeks, and then they get a certification from the state of Texas.
That is fantastic. You mentioned you're a college professor. Let's tell your story a little bit. How did you wind up doing that? And you mentioned about some food insecurity situations in your household with your mom back in the day when you were growing up. Can you tell your story about how you went from that situation to actually becoming a college professor and then starting this nonprofit? And take your
nonprofits
time.
Nonprofits are gold. Mm-hmm. And again, I learned at an early age that people plant seeds in you, and it's just about introducing somebody to something that they weren't introduced to before. And because my mom was sick and she couldn't work, and so my sisters and I were hungry, we didn't have clothes like everybody else. All of the, you know, the typical things that happens when you don't have anybody that can, and she's a single parent mm-hmm. that can, you know, provide for you. Well, at the age of 14, I had the opportunity to go to work for an organization called, which is now Texas Workforce Commission, but back in the day, it was called Private Industry Council.
Okay.
And they had a summer job program, and I had the ability, they took us before school ended when I turned 14, and they were preparing us for summer employment. And so we went to middle school, Comstock Middle School, mm-hmm. and they taught us soft skills. You know, soft skills is what will keep the job. Your personality can get you fired. But soft skills, they taught us how to communicate effectively and professionally, mm-hmm. What information you needed to know to be a professional on your job. And then in the summer, I got to work for the parole office on CADIS. And I got to be a file clerk, but I was just introduced to an environment. I wasn't, for the summer, I had the ability to come out of poverty and see something different and talk to people who were successful, people who were educated, people who had access, and people who just gave me an ability to look at life differently. And so for 12 weeks over the summer, I got to work at Private Industry Council. And it just sparked an interest in me, like, hey, I can eat if I had a job. You know, I could buy clothes for my sisters and I if I was able to go to work every day, because that summer job provided me the ability to help my mom pay bills. It helped me to have the ability to buy school clothes and buy groceries. And I just kind of, you know, got the bug from there. And I started working after school, you know, and all of those things. And I went to a trade. I still became a teenage mother. But I had already gotten the bug, right? To be
right.
successful. I wasn't mm-hmm. going to go and be in that same cycle.
It just made your journey a little bit different as opposed to, you know, without having a family started.
Right. And what it was motivation. Now, because I'm looking at this little baby, mm-hmm. that if I don't take care of my business, then I'm going to end up just like how I grew up. And I didn't want that for my child. And so I went to trade school. And after trade school, I was able to work for a local healthcare facility, and they provided us the opportunity to go back to school, and they paid for me to go to college while I was working for the hospital system. Mm-hmm. And as I was working in the hospital system, I had a patient that says, you're really good at what you're doing. I have a position as an adjunct professor. You know, would
get
you
out
be
of here. That's great.
how, you know, like just right timing all the time.
Yeah.
And so I started out teaching, started out as an assistant, like a lab assistant. And then they were like, you're doing really, really well. We're going to give you your own class this next semester. And then I had the ability to teach my own class. And from there, I learned a lot more skills and began to teach more classes. but I knew that it wasn't, nothing happens by happenstance, and every opportunity is for where your, what your mission in life is. And so as I began to teach these classes and I began to get have relationships with my students, I realized they were just like me, you know, and they needed some little something extra. So I feel like everything that you experience is not for you. And so that experience, the ability to be a college professor and learn how to write my own curriculums and things of that nature, provided me with the basis and knowledge I needed for the organization for Empowering the Masses. I had the ability to write my own curriculum and submit it to the state myself and be able to offer these trainings on my own and be able to kind of remove some of the red tape for some of the students who were needing to enroll but didn't have or meet certain criteria and all those types of things. And so out of that, being a college professor, I had the ability to start the organization myself and use my skills earned to offer these trainings from a place of understanding what it took for them to be successful.
Exactly, because you had to do it yourself. You didn't hear about it. You did it. And you were able to accomplish your goal because, like you said, you were able to take advantage of these opportunities and recognize an opportunity. Because sometimes, like you said, from the beginning, people don't know an opportunity when they see it, but you have to have some sort of clue, some sort of education, some sort of, you know, guide that can say, guess what? You can do this too, and you need to recognize your opportunities.
And I have to tell that to my students, like, don't look at our people who come through our programs, don't look at who you see before you. I'm going to be honest with you and transparent with you. This is who I am. This is my backstory. Was it easy? Absolutely not. But this is where I stand. And so it's not where you start, it's where you're going. And then what are you choosing to do to get to where you're supposed to go? You know, at the end of the day, don't look at your current situation, but what do you feel like you're called to do? What do you feel like? You don't experience trials and tribulations for yourself. You experience them for whatever your calling is. So don't look at it like being hungry or my mom passing away at an early, you know, so early, or my sister and I not having access to certain things. Yes, it was hard, but I feel like it was because I needed to have lived experience in order to do the work.
Exactly. It prepared you for moments. It was something that didn't break you, but it actually taught you how to not quit. It taught you how to get through adversity. Because sometimes people, when they face adversity, especially kids, if they don't know how to face adversity, they just stop. So you just tell them, no, it's never over unless you quit.
Yeah, there's no stopping. Because if you stop, you're gonna live and have what you had. And I don't want to live there, and I don't want my children, you know, to live there, or anybody that comes in contact with me. There's always a way to get around it, but you got to do your part too. You got to listen, you got to take heed, you got to research, you got to ask questions, you know, and you got to have the will to complete it and finish it.
How are you able to put together your staff? I know you know people, but how are you able to choose or actually bring people to you that say, you know what, we have some of the like-mindedness on this project for this nonprofit, or I think what you're doing can benefit, you know, the people as well. How were you able to get some of your staff?
I'm going to tell you, like, everything, like, you just do what you're supposed to do and it all kind of falls into place. But it started out with for a long time, it was me doing all driving the truck, picking up the donations, unloading the donations, setting up the donations, teaching the classes. It was me. But, you know, during the pandemic, we had the ability to apply for a program called AmeriCorps. Mm-hmm. And AmeriCorps provides team members and individuals to build capacity for nonprofit organizations. And we were able to get 3 AmeriCorps members during the pandemic. And those members are help you kind of build capacity. Mm-hmm. And so we started there utilizing those AmeriCorps members. And then we got connected to UTA of Dallas. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, UTA in Arlington. Mm-hmm. And we had the ability to get social work interns. And those social work interns, and, you know, he sent us the right people at the right time with the right vision and the right thought process.
There you go. There you go.
Because they loved our mission, and they came in and they saw and they heard what we were trying to do, and they utilized the skill sets that they had. I have a model, empowerment model called Capacity In and Capacity Out. We have this infographic where there's capacity coming in and capacity coming out. Nobody should come to your organization to pull trash and answer phones, people should come in and be able to utilize their skills. And so those interns had the ability to come in and utilize their knowledge to help us expand our programs and help us build capacity. And they enjoyed it so much, they decided to stay, you know, beyond graduation.
It's fantastic. So, again, it matched up what they had in mind with their lives, or at least for this part of their lives. And I love the way on your website, you also have it. Education plus advocacy equals empowerment. And I think especially kids coming out of college, they're all about trying to find themselves and what can I do to change some things and make things a better world. And I think you provided them with a perfect opportunity. Again, we're talking with Tammy Johnson. She is the founder and CEO of Empowering the Masses. Your website is phenomenal and always impressive with people with their websites, when their websites are on point, because literally nowadays your website's like your business card, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people go look at your website before they even have a conversation with you.
Exactly. And then when you're making the pitch to, you know, get funding or grants or whatever, you got to show what you're all about, not just you personally when you make the pitch, but they'll look on your website to see, okay, what have you been doing? What are you trying to do? And is there upside? Am I wrong?
Oh, no, absolutely. And I think that I've talked to a lot of individuals who want to volunteer with us or see how they can sponsor us, but they've already visited the website and they've already come with knowledge. And I have to have the ability to say, yes, that's true. Yes, that's what we're doing. You know, but what I did learn also is impact comes in numbers. And so we have to know exactly what we're doing. You know, we have to track those things and be able to say, this is what we did. This is how many students graduated. This is how many people we fed. This is how many people came to our lunch and learns. This is the feedback that we received. We know that we have to do the work and track the impact.
Speaking of the impact, I'm looking at your core values as we speak. I love it. The number one core value is belief. You say we hold a firm belief that people can change their lives and their circumstances. Number two, understanding. We have walked the same paths as those we've served, but each journey is unique to each individual. Accountability. To equip and empower, we must be accountable to the results of our work with each person we serve. And learning. The more we learn as an organization, the better we can teach others and the better we can serve. Tammy, this stuff is just powerful. I mean, I don't know when do you sleep? When you're all over it.
Here lately, my kids have required me to do more sleeping, but they know that it's going to be far and few between because I'm trying to build, and continue to build for the community. But our core values also come from that place of culture humility, meaning I know we have a belief because I've done it and accountability and all of the things because I have a lived experience. But what we understand with those core values is we are not the experts. Our community is. We are supposed to do the work, but bring our community in and make sure that they're helping us tell their story. And we're developing and providing impact that's impactful to them and not just us as an organization.
The last three core values you have, education. You believe the foundation for advancing livelihoods lies with an individual's possession of acquired knowledge. We aim to indoctrinate our audience with tools, insight, and opportunities to promote continued education. Advocacy, that's the next one. We trust that an individual advances capacity once they begin to champion on behalf of their well-being. We rally to this initiative in the quest to create engaged communities. And finally, empowerment. Empowerment can only be achieved if sustainability and vitality coexist. We commit to the furnishing our audience while posturing them for engagement to promote the empowerment models. I love this. How long did it take you to come up with these core values? You were a college professor, and so I know you did this, but I'm like, where in your spare time did you say, okay, as I put together this nonprofit, this is what our belief system is?
It's sitting and talking with our team also to say, this is what we do. And our team saying, these are the things that we do based on what we're doing. This is what we believe. you know, and this is our mission to make sure that we accomplish these things. We know, and all of our shirts that our team members wear, it says the formula. There has to be a formula for success beyond what we do. And that's those three things: education, advocacy, empowerment. Like, everything that we're doing is providing education and then teaching people how to advocate, you know, and then they become empowered. Somebody educated me mm-hmm. and taught me how to advocate for myself. And now I'm here is empowering the masses. So I was educated. I was taught how to advocate. And now I have the ability to empower others. And so that's where that comes from.
I love that. When I speak to schools and classrooms, I tell kids all the time, no matter the age, I said, there's power in knowledge, and you have the power. And guess who can give you even more power? Your teacher or your educator.
Mm-hmm. Or your educator. And people can take away your material possessions. They can take all of those things. They cannot take away the knowledge that
that's
you
right.
gain. In life.
That's right. That's right. And that's something, again, you can't fulfill all of your dreams unless you have an idea of how to go there. I really can't say enough about what you guys are doing. I did not mention you actually do workshops and have programs for seniors as well. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, as far as our seniors, because I think that they're one of the most vulnerable populations. Also in our community, they've either worked and raised children and grandchildren, all of these things, but sometimes they're left, you know, to themselves. And so mm-hmm. they don't have the opportunity to ask questions or teach or how to advocate for themselves. And so our goal is always to make sure that we provide them a safe place, you know, for them to come and congregate with one another, and then partner with other organizations like Dallas County Health and Human Services to come in and provide educational opportunities for our seniors to advocate and teach them skills, how to live on a fixed income, how to stretch the money that you get to help you prepare and take care of yourself and your family. Things like that.
Fantastic. Before we let you get out of here, is there anything else we need to touch on and let any potential future partners or anyone who'd like to volunteer and be involved with empoweringthemasses.org?
Yes, we always need volunteers every Friday as we prepare for our drive-through distribution on Saturday mornings. We need volunteers every Saturday morning. We have some things that we're praying about and hoping that will come to fruition before the end of this year. And so if you are in real estate or you're a grocer that can help us in that space, please reach out to us, you know, and share your knowledge with us so that we can take this organization to the next level and serve even more people.
And I highly recommend everyone go to the website and take your time. You will be amazed at all the different pages and the links and all the different things that you have going on, and as well as I call it the credibility of some of your partnerships that you've been able to establish on a local, statewide, and national level. Tammy Johnson, congratulations on the success, and may it continue and continue to grow.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, and thank you all for joining us on Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.